New York Times report that the chief executive of the Humane Society of the United States resigned last Friday after sexual harassment allegations against him prompted an uprising from staff and donors. The Times goes on to report that Wayne Pacelli, who was the face of the Humane Society for more than a decade, had held onto support from a majority of the group's board members, which had voted to immediately end an investigation into his behavior. Yet by last Friday afternoon, donors and employees of the organization, one of the most prominent animal welfare groups in the nation, were distracting themselves from Mr. Pacelli, condemning the board's decision and calling for him to leave. In an email to the staff on Friday, Mr. Pacelli wrote that he was stepping aside to allow a search for a successor to begin. And notably, and as an aside, in that email address, there was very little apology for his behavior.
Well, let's consider the fact he gets to send a going away email when he should really be fired, right?
Yeah. The resignation of Mr. Pacelli, who was 52 years old, who is known as a charismatic, aggressive promoter of the Humane Society, capped weeks of tumult that shook the organization and its reputation. In December, the organization commissioned a law firm in Washington to conduct an internal investigation into allegations of workplace misconduct by Mr. Pacelli. The Washington Post originally reported on the allegations, which included complaints from a former intern who said that Mr. Pacelli kissed her against her will in 2005, a former employee who said he had asked to masturbate in front of her and offered her oral sex in a hotel room in 2006, and a former employee who said he stopped by her office late one night in 2012 and asked her to salsa dance with him. In an interview on Friday with the New York Times, Mr. Pacelli denied those allegations and suggested that an investigation into a single complaint from 2005 had expanded into other claims as part of a, quote, coordinated campaign against the Humane Society.
Okay, Jenny, so have we seen any reporting about a mysterious coordinated campaign against the Humane Society? I mean, who are these mysterious enemies? You know, it's such a common complaint from organizational leaders that it's
everybody else attacking them.
Yeah. And you know, an investigation from a single complaint can very well expand. That's, in fact, what an investigation is. There is a complaint, and they investigate and find stuff.
By the end of the day, the group's leaders were no longer able to contain the damage. Jennifer Fearing, who worked as a lobbyist for the Humane Society, and she's actually, her name is should be known to animal activists in California because she was one of the prime movers for the Proposition 2 referendum in 2008. She coordinated groups to activists to get signatures to put that ballot measure on the ballot in 2008. Jennifer Fearing was quoted on early Friday morning that because of the board's decision to retain Mr. Pacelli, she would not renew her contract to work for the organization at that time. She was quoted in the New York Times saying, quote, "I can't make any sense of the board's decision to end the investigation. Women were still coming forward. That these so-called leaders weren't inclined to learn more about the sexualized culture that many employees experienced over many years is beyond comprehension to me and feels like a betrayal of trust," end quote. As chief executive, Mr. Pacelli expanded his organization's focus beyond the protection of cats and dogs to efforts like opposing puppy mills, dog fighting, abusive seals, and some industrial farming practices. So he did. He did expand the Humane Society of the United States from being a dog and cat protection organization to being one that worked for farm animals and worked for to push the food industry to be more cognizant of the animal abuse inherent in animal agriculture.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like, you know, again, that's one of the issues you see here with this organization is that, you know, good people can do bad things and bad people can do good things, but should they be your CEO?
And, exactly.
And does having done past good negate past wrongs, you know, and do people typically get vetted for a job when you apply it, you know, depending on the nature of these incidences and what happened, it doesn't necessarily mean just because a person gets fired from this that he should be, you know, forced out into the wilderness forever. Maybe he can do good work somehow, but in future roles, you have to go into an organization knowing the background.
Well, I don't think anybody's going to be able to ignore Wayne Pacelli's background.
Right.
Going forward. Through a series of more background on HSUS, through a series of mergers, affiliations, and corporate partnerships with other animal protection and animal care groups, Mr. Pacelli, who held his position since 2004, is credited with building the Humane Society into the nation's 138th largest charity. The organization has more than $210 million in net assets at the end of 2016, according to its latest nonprofit filings. And records put Mr. Pacelli's base salary at more than $333,000 in 2016. After Pacelli resigned, Kitty Block was named acting president and chief executive of the Humane Society. Ms. Block is a lawyer and is currently president of the Humane Society International, the global affiliate of the Humane Society of the United States. That's the arm of the HSUS that does international animal advocacy. One woman's group applauded the decision but said that questions remained about the leadership of the animal welfare group. Tony Van Pelt, president of the National Organization for Women, was quoted in the New York Times as saying, "It's good that he's gone, but we have to question this board and the culture of the Humane Society." And she went on to say that the board needed to apologize to the women who harassed and asked Mr. Pacelli to do the same.
Absolutely.
And there goes Wayne Pacelli, and there goes an organization that's in, I'm sure, in a lot of pain right now. And hopefully it can find its way forward to continue to do good work for the animals. And I mentioned this in last week's show, but I'll mention it again. You know, how is it that one individual can undertake actions that can do have so much potential to do so much harm to their organization and to their cause that they're passionate in?
Right. So. And I think probably in his case, this is just sort of... dare I say, run-of-the-mill patriarchy and sexism and men in power. And let me tell you, if you're the CEO of any organization, you cannot date interns, period. It's a power imbalance.
Exactly.
It's never okay. If they can show up naked on your doorstep, you should not date them. It's not okay.
Take a step back. Yeah. It's because there's an inherent power imbalance there that cannot be rectified. You're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio, hosted by Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms. What do we have next, Danny?
All right, moving on. The Ohio Valley Resource, an Ohio-based regional newspaper and National Public Radio, reported last week that the U.S. Department of Agriculture has denied a petition by the National Chicken Council to remove the line speed limit on work at some slaughterhouses, a move that food safety advocates are calling a victory for workers and consumers and, you know, depending for the chickens. And briefly, let's just consider, you know, that we have regulations around how fast mechanization can slaughter animals and not cut off too many of the workers' fingers, because that's sort of the world. We have to have such regulations because that's the world we live in, which many of us here would like to have change. The National Chicken Council proposal could have increased the line speed for some workers in processing plants where accidents and injuries are already a concern. Since then, the USDA received more than 100,000 public comments. This week, the department's Food Safety Inspection Service turned the petition down. Debbie Berkowitz, a former senior official with the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration, commonly known as OSHA, I believe, commented in the article, "This is a direct rebuke of the poultry industry whose business model is to sacrifice worker health in order to reap profits." We've talked about that a lot on this show, that many marginalized humans are also injured and hurt in these sort of secret businesses.
And to be honest, that is the gist of this particular reporting. It's less about animal welfare than it is about labor issues.
Right. Berkowitz is now a senior fellow with the National Employment Law Project, a worker rights group. Berkowitz and other food safety and worker rights advocates opposed the council's petition, which the poultry industry said would have increased efficiency and modernized the systems. Of course, they would say that. In September,
What else would they say? What else could they say?
Yeah. They're not doing it to slow down and lose money. In September, the National Chicken Council petitioned the USDA to allow plants that currently operate under what's known as the, quote, new poultry inspection system to remove the current limit of, get this, 175 birds per minute on the slaughter and processing line. I can't even count that fast. I couldn't count 175 birds a minute flying by. And I assume there are workers standing there trying to cut them or dip them in boiling water or something.
They're grabbing them by the legs and shackling them.
Yeah, preparing them for the machine later on, I guess.
Many machines later on.
Paul Kicker, the Food Safety Inspection Service's acting administrator, said the council's proposal was redundant, saying there's an existing procedure in place for approving waivers of this kind, and that the USDA didn't want to set up an additional program and additional staff to administer line speed waivers for chicken plants.
Right, so here we're talking about taxpayer dollars, again, sort of subsidizing or doing the work for an industry that is making large amounts of profit.
Right. Kind of sounds like there's a process. They could get this waiver, but they don't even want to deal with that. They just try to change the whole thing. So far, only 20 poultry processing plants operate under the optional inspection program, and some evidence indicates that these plants have issues with worker and food safety, even though it's the optional program. A recent report by the advocacy group Food and Water Watch found that 30% of plants under the new system failed performance standards for salmonella. And federal data showed that one Pilgrim's Pride plant in West Virginia operating under the new system had 5 severe injuries in a 2-year period. That's a higher injury rate than in any other similar facility in Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia. Kicker said most plants that are allowed to operate at 175 birds per minute do not do so. It's just a little too fast to be safe, it sounds like. Worker safety advocates are also keeping an eye on a proposal to increase work speeds in the pork industry. The USDA recently announced a new swine slaughter inspection system that will allow pig slaughterhouses to kill pigs at higher speeds if it is deemed safe. And this story comes from the Ohio Valley Resource. So
yeah, so, you know, we can talk a little bit about this. I just think that this whole area is an intersection of labor groups, consumers, and poultry companies, at which is the heart of which is a chicken.
Right.
But that chicken is barely considered in this system. But so to kind of unpack that just a little bit, labor groups are hoping that poultry industry companies don't increase the processing speed line if the plants are permitted to operate at higher slaughter line speeds. So that's what's sort of at the heart of this is the poultry companies want the slaughter lines to go faster so they can pump more chicken bodies into the rest of the system and make the rest of their labor pool work much faster and incur more injuries, right? At the same time, consumers have to trust the poultry industry that they'll be effective in self-policing and making sure that at this higher rate of slaughter and processing, they're not allowing undue amounts of fecal contamination, basically, in the rest of their line.
Because there is an allowed limit of fecal contamination,
exactly.
Usually.
Yeah. And it was interesting, too, researching this story, is that this idea of this new poultry inspection system is born from the idea that the old poultry inspection system, which dates from the 50s when poultry, chicken slaughter and processing became more of a big business, those systems were based on visual inspections, looking for tumors and fecal matter and things like that. But really, as we know now, the bigger threat from these animal products is salmonella and this vast mixing of animal parts with other animal parts, so that these things that you can't see,
right,
that are a function of the systems that these poultry companies produce and design and implement, we're at their mercy of those things.
And as you speed up that system faster and faster, it's going to become even harder to keep things clean, to keep track of what's going on, and that's where the disease propagates throughout that system, I think.
Yeah, it's hard to find the source because everything's moving so fast that you don't have a, if you blink, it's gone.
Right.
And then the poultry companies, they're hoping that they have a system that's humane enough that the workers actually care to do their jobs properly, that they create a system that they can make safe food. So it's just this really kind of bad intersection that Yeah, if you consume chicken, you're at the mercy of this system that you cannot control. And I'll just go ahead and... I just want... You know, I'm going to share one little... I haven't done reading the trades lately, and I just want to share with the non-human radio listeners this little bit of trade industry news I came across. An Iowan committed to saving newborn piglets was named Entrepreneur of the Year by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Matthew Ruda and Abraham Espinoza won the Farm Bureau's Rural Entrepreneurship Challenge for their startup company, Swine Tech Inc., which aims to save piglets from being crushed by sows in pork farms, in gestation crates. Crushing is a recurring challenge for pork producers, an oddity of the domestic species that has largely baffled researchers. This is a direct quote from a trade industry publication. Ruda's company, Swine Tech Inc., has designed a device that listens for the distressed squeals of piglets in danger of getting squished. Then it delivers a mild shock to get mom moving. So this is what's being heralded as new developments in pork production, and it just kind of shows the heartlessness of this industry. I just can't call it any other anything else but just a base heartlessness.
These are sows in their tiny gestation crates with their babies. And the industry finds it odd that since they can't even turn around, they might accidentally crush their babies.
Yeah.
Or that they might actually be so unhappy that they want to crush their babies, you know?
Wow. All right. So, yeah, I have no faith in any animal agriculture industry.
And remember, pigs are smarter than dogs.
Thank you. Let's all remember that. There's really no basic intelligence and emotional difference between most of these domestic farm animals and most of our domestic pets. You're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio hosted by Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms. And we move on to our final news piece, which is a little piece from our neighbors to the south at UC Davis. Marlis Jean, a reporter with the UC Davis campus newspaper, The Aggie, reported last week that UC Davis fraternities battled it out in a competition centered around maintaining a, you won't believe what these frats are battling about, they are battling about maintaining a vegan diet. Theta Xi and Theta Chi teamed up with the Davis animal rights group People for the Elimination of Animal Cruelty Through Education, which stands for PEACE, to compete in the campus's first ever vegan frat challenge. According to PEACE member and second-year animal biology major Emmanuel Chikandard, the vegan frat challenge is basically where for a week, two frats go vegan. This means that their entire house is stocked with vegan food, and the PEACE organization helps them cook it. PEACE has a couple of people going every day to the different frat houses to help them cook breakfast, lunch, and dinner vegan. The event began last week with a Costco run where stewards from each frat accompanied PEACE members to go pick up all the supplies and food necessary to feed the 18 or so frat members who live in each house. And the cost of the groceries was underwritten by PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, Taco Bell, and Chipotle.
That's a strange group.
Isn't it, though? And other stuff was donated and supplied by a few local and global plant-based companies. PEACE designed a point system for the Vegan Frat Challenge as a way to encourage and incentivize the members. One frat took the championship crown and prize, but prizes were awarded to a first, second, and third place individual in each frat as well. And I'm sorry, I do not know which frat house won. That was a missing piece in this college newspaper article.
The animals won.
Yeah. You know what? Let's just call it that. Let's see here. So they go through the scoring system. The frat members were awarded extra points for bringing friends to various events that PEACE organized, like showing the movie Cowspiracy and a couple of other welfare and animal rights related movies. And the grand prize for the winning frat will be a trip to Animal Place Animal Sanctuary in Grass Valley. And PEACE intentionally focused the event on the male Greek community in order to help dispel the stigma around veganism and masculinity, as well as raise awareness for everyone across the UC Davis campus. Ileana Zisman, who is a third-year animal science major and the president of PEACE, told the UC Davis Aggie that, quote, meat and masculinity are so tied together. The reason we are giving attention to the Greek community and the male Greek community in particular is because they deserve to have this education about this lifestyle. It's also showing that caring about something isn't something to be ashamed of. Yeah, I think it's not only do they deserve to have that education, they need to have that education.
Right, right.
And Zisman went on to say that we at Peace believe that the biggest way to make change is to educate and speak with each other and to listen and to learn from each other. For Peace, this is more a value system than it is a diet. It's more about the basic concept of freedom for everyone to have a right to their own life and to not be dictated by another being, whether that's a human or a non-human animal. And the expectation of the event is not that the members of Theta Chi or Theta Xi will emerge as vegans, but that Peace, the campus Peace Group, will educate part of the Davis community about the health and ethical benefits of switching to a vegan or plant-based diet.
Awesome. I think there was a quote here from Chad who said, "Bro, that tofu was so grub."
Thank you, Danny.
All right, now it is time for the Chico Animal Rights Calendar of Events. Jeannie, please enumerate and illuminate them for us.
I shall. We'll make it brief today. First, I want to point out the foodie tip of the week for Chicoans is that there are now vegan scones available daily at all Cal Java locations.
Sweet.
Look for the V sign on the flavor of the week. And I just want to give a big shout out to the baker and founder of Dang Vegan Foods for expanding vegan options in all of Chico. And that is none other than Chris Hudson of Dang Vegan. You can look for him on social media. He runs a beautiful Instagram account at Dang Vegan. I hope to have him on the show as a guest in about a month or 6 weeks or so. So, coming up events, we have a protest on February 9th in Sacramento. I'm going to give this a shout out just because I think it's important to do. There is a Friends Not Food Bacon Fest protest going on. It's hosted by Sacramento Animal Save. It will be on this week, Friday, February 9th, from 4:30 to 8 p.m. in Sacramento. Sacramento Animal Save and Anonymous for the Voiceless Sacramento invite you to join them as they come together for their peaceful protest and Cube of Truth demo at the 2018 Sacramento Bacon Fest on Friday, February 9th. They'll be meeting at the Sacramento Co-op, the Natural Food Co-op, and then walking over to the wine bar where the Bacon Fest will be happening.
I think it's worth commenting that the rise of the bacon meme over the past 15 years is because bacon is so cheap. And why is bacon so cheap? Because there are sows trapped in pens that can't even turn around, and so they crush their babies.
Thank you. That is a ray of solid, piercing truth into the facts of this
matter. Sorry to throw you off there, Jeannie.
Yeah. Let's see. What else do we have? Coming up on February 17th, a heads up, the Cooking for Compassion and Health series has started up again. To the Chico chapter of Dharma Voices for Animals has organized a year-long set of monthly classes on vegan cooking. And on February 17th, they will have a class on exploring Indian cuisine. If you love Indian food but you feel it's too complicated to make at home, or if you're confused about all the combinations of Indian spices, this class is for you. They'll be exploring the unique elements and techniques of Indian cuisine that make it stand out from all the other cuisines in the world as a uniquely delicious way of eating.
Indeed.
This will be on Saturday, February 17th at the Sky Creek Dharma Center from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's a hands-on class, and you'll get just a couple of hours of great conversation and great food and learning all these great techniques and not to be afraid of making Indian food. You can buy tickets at brownpapertickets.com. You can find the event on the non-human radio event tab. And coming up on February 22nd, mark your calendars, is the Plant-Based Chico monthly meeting. That is hosted by Plant-Based Chico and our own Nancy Norby Matthews, who's an indefatigable Whole Foods plant-based evangelizer. This meeting will be on Thursday, February 22nd from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Chico Guildhall on Nord Avenue. They will be meeting, and the topic for Thursday's meeting this on the 22nd will be diabetes and type 2 diabetes in particular, and how it can be improved or cured by eating a whole foods plant-based diet. And coming up on February 27th, please put your mark your calendar for the February Chico Vegan Potluck. That will happen from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Chico Public Library at 6 p.m. And that is about it. I just want to give also one more thing to look out for is the Conscious Eating Conference in Berkeley on March 10th. It's going to be hosted by United Poultry Concerns. It will be in the David Brower Center in Berkeley. It is free for students with IDs, and the focus will be on getting people to think about how to make their best food choices for the planet, for themselves, and for other animals. It's a great conference, and we'll be organizing a carpool from Chico to go to that. All right, and I think we have one last piece of business to take care of. The animal rights quote of the week. Go ahead, take it away, Danny.
The animal rights quote of the week is from the Reverend Andrew Lindsay, a British Anglican priest and a prominent figure in the Christian vegetarian movement. The Reverend Andrew Lindsay wrote, "We can't change the world for animals without changing our ideas about animals. We have to move from the idea that animals are things, tools, machines, commodities, and resources here for our use to the idea that as sentient beings, they may have their own inherent value and dignity." Amen.
Amen. Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. And thanks, as always, to Bill Mash of Without a Roof and Sue Hildebrand of The Real Issue for their engineering assistance and moral support. Stay tuned for Sue's show, The Real Issue, coming up next.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, or its staff.
We do, however, reflect the opinions of our non-human fellow earthlings who would rather not be killed and eaten, hunted, raced, experimented upon, and otherwise abused.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist rockers Rise Against. This is Danny Toms and Jeannie Trezino signing off.
Until next week, be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan.
All right.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond.